Accession number 18270, Reel 2.
Paul Hammer, Reel 2.
Yes, going back to on duty outside Buckingham Palace, it was interesting. When you're on duty all night, you hear all these different clocks strike, different times. When it was on the hour, at 3 o'clock you would hear Big Ben or the chime of Whitehall or various other clocks around it, and you'd see some peculiar sights early hours in the morning. Stragglers staggering home, fights used to occur out in front of you, squabbles, prostitutes running around, taxis in those days, because life in London now is totally different than what it was in those days. But and then going back to being provoked on duty, there was a case of an American lady some years afterwards where she rattled the sentry, and I think he stuck his bayonet into her hand or something. And so that, but when there were crowds, when they used to change guard, it was impossible to move there, so it was far better off to put the sentries inside the palace, out of the general public's way, so that you couldn't get in trouble with them. So, because if you'd been stood there for 2 hours and somebody come up, you were tired and weary, and someone come up to annoy you, it was a rather temptation to bang your rifle onto their toe or something, or stamp on their toe and tell them to clear off. But other people used to appreciate you, but unfortunately in life, you do get a few people who abuse the system, and some of those sentries used to get abused, which was rather sad. But anyway, they're inside the Buckingham Palace now. I believe there is still one outside St James's Palace. We also used to do double sentry. We used to do sentries at Marlborough House, where Queen Mary lived, and also the clock tower at Kensington. It was St James's Palace. There was a double sentry there. One incident I remember at night time at Queen Mary's house, she used to have a lot of cats, and the housekeeper used to put the cats out at night time, and they used to sit in the roadway, the gravel path outside when you was in the garden at Marlborough House, and these cats used to fighting and squabbling half the night long. One used to have to pick up a stone and try to drive the cats away. Otherwise, these cats used to torment you half the night long. We used to do double sentries outside in the front of Marlborough House as well, while the Queen Mary was alive. So, and then when we used to march back to the guard room, about a historic, when we used to march under the corridors at the side of Ambassador's Court there, there was a low ceiling, and we used to scratch our bayonets into the ceiling of the archway. So historically, I don't know if they're still there or not, but if you walk down to that little archway, you see lines in the roof where the sentries scratch their bayonets into the roof from the entrance, from the main road, just by where the clock tower is, going round to, and we used to march into the back way through Ambassador's Court, so that was where we used to scratch our bayonets into the roof, and that used to give us a sense of relief, probably after standing for 2 hours on a cold, frosty, or wet, windy night.
Did you like doing public duties?
Some were interesting, others were very boring. I found them. Later on, we used to do Tower of London duties. I found the Tower of London quite exhilarating to do duties on, because all day long we used to fraternise with the local girls. And then I found, even though the Tower of London is got a dreadful name, but I found the Tower of London to be rather exhilarating. At night times you would hear all these weird sayings, the ravens croaking, the creaking of the boats on the Thames. I found it quite an interesting, I think of all the public duties I did, I think I found the Tower of London the most exhilarating to stand for 2 hours.
So you didn't find it a creepy place?
No, I didn't. I was coming from the country, the backwoods of the country, and I was brought up into that sort of austere life. So no, I didn't find Tower of London. I found it rather an exciting place, really. Terrific amount of history attached to the place, and centuries old. And I found it quite an. We used to have the duty of night time with the keys, and if you were on that, I remember one of our drummer boys was the late Billy Turnant's son, and he said to me one night, "I'll try and swing the last post." I said, "Don't, Billy, please." we used to have quite a bit of fun there, so we could have a look round Crown Jewels in the daytime. So yeah, as a young 18-19 year old, I found it quite an exhilarating place to, as opposed to the regimental dictum of standing outside Buckingham Palace, where you never knew who was watching you. Thousands of people were watching you, so you had to be extremely careful what you did, and you had to be very meticulous in what you did. So in the Tower of London, you didn't have this thought of somebody watching you constantly for 2 hours while you were there. So being on duty outside Buckingham Palace or all these other places where you stood, and the general public were watching you, because if someone from the regiment could report you if they saw you doing something slightly abnormal, and you would get reported for it, and any offence committed on public duties was a recordable offence, which meant obviously 7 days CB. So you had to be constantly on your guard and on your duty at all times. So it was very strict. And so in the Tower of London, you didn't have this. So probably only the Ravens was watching you in one or two places. So you weren't so concerned. So it was much more relaxed.
Did you like display as a guardsman?
Yes. I liked the swank of being a guardsman. When they were training, you used to say to hold your head up, "Who are you?" You know. One enjoyed the public duties, to accept, particularly marching. I always loved marching, and the discipline obviously was very severe to get you to march in the way they want you to march, and so one enjoyed that. Yes.
What was so pleasurable about marching?
I don't know. It was relaxation, discipline of marching, the feel of marching to the music. I love military music, and some of the military marches are fantastic to march to. And I still sometimes now I march up and down the room when I hear some of these lovely military tunes. They're great.
What were relations like with the other Guards regiments?
Between any other regiment, there was always a certain this vocal sort of bickering and battering going on. But basically, on the whole, it was very good. But I mean, we always talk about the horse guards as the donkey wallopers. And their hackles rise when we talk about a donkey walloper. the jocks and the mix and the grenadiers. Perhaps that's why they separated the grenadiers to be right, and the coast dreams always line up on the left. So they didn't get on in the early days. So that's why they separated us, and that's why we have our plume, our red plume on the right hand side, and the grenadiers have their white plume on the left hand, so we can recognise one another at a distance. We don't start scrapping. But the regiments have been known to scrap together. In Singapore, when we were there, we scrapped together a bit once or twice here, but it's all good friends at the end of the day.
So you're on public duties in London. How long did this last for?
Well, that lasted till the autumn of 1948, when we got sent to Leap Beach, Southampton Water, to train cadets, where we're very relaxed, living in tents on the beachhead there, in a former military camp where there is now a car park. and we were there for some weeks when we were summoned to go to Malaya.
How did you feel about that news?
Well, apprehensive, because we knew there was a war going on out there, and people were being killed there, so we were apprehensive. But, well, 18, 19 years of age, you don't really know at that age really what's in front of you, so I suppose we, in some ways, we were keen to go, but apprehensive.
What was the voyage like?
Terrible, terrible, dreadful. One of the most worst voyages I've ever had in my life. Unfortunately, I was seasick. I don't travel well on the sea, and I suffered terrible seasickness. And I spent half my time with my head over the loo. I remember once lining up on parade in the Indian Ocean, where 1 minute the waves was higher than the end of the boat, and we were lining up, and the command officer came round for an inspection, and the boat took an awful lurch. And my colleague and I next to one another, I think we were in the middle ranks, we made a dive for the side of the ship and nearly knocked command officer over. We were going to be sick. So, yes, it's not a journey I wish to repeat.
Which battalion of the Gulfstream Guards were you in?
I started in the 2nd and I served in the 2nd through 8, my service.
And do you know when you arrived in Malaya?
Well, we must have arrived in Malaya in must have been September 1948. About September.
What were your first impressions of Malaya?
Not good, because when I got, we were encamped in a place called Nisun, and I had dysentery, and I was sick, ill for a fortnight there, so my first impressions of going abroad on a troop ship were not very favourable, I can assure you. And having dysentery as well in a foreign land, in a foreign place, feeling dreadfully ill, were not very impressive.
Did they tell you why you were being posted to Malaya?
Well, yes, they told us we were going to fight the emergency out there. All these civilians were being killed out there. All these, the bandits were running riot out there, murdering these rubber planters and tin miners, and et cetera, et cetera. And so we were sent there to put down this uprising, communist uprising.
How did they treat your dysentery?
Medical officer gave me tablets and drink. Otherwise, I was in CRS for several days, but it eventually went and I got the better of it.
So had you been separated from your unit?
No, I was still with my unit. No, I was at that particular time, I was still with my unit.
What happened to you next?
Well, we then discovered we were going to be sent up country to a place called Tapper, which is in the state of Perak, or Perak. And so we then encamped, and can't remember where we went, by train or lorry, probably went by train, up to this this camp, which had been hewn out the hillside for us. And we went there, we went into this camp, which was a tented camp on various banks on the side of a hill. So we went there, obviously, in the later part of 1948.
Which company and platoon were you in?
I was number 14, I was in 14 platoon, 3 company.
What were conditions like at Tapper?
Well, pretty grim, pretty grim. We were doing patrols and into the jungles, and we used to have to do guard duties. And because it was a new camp, it was all very muddy and clay, etc., etc. But we had an Afi canteen there, and we used to take great samples of the of the local brew, which was known as tiger beer. Wretched stuff. They said it was brewed out of palm trees. I don't know where they brewed it from, but It was pretty potent stuff, and it caused some guardsmen to do rather hilarious things, or horrendous things, between the two, I think.
What type of horrendous things?
I don't know. I don't wish to go into that now.
And did you go out on patrol straight away?
Yes, yeah, we used to go on patrol into the jungles. Sometimes in platoon strength, sometimes in section strength, but mainly platoon strength. Later on, sometimes we'd go for a fortnight, and sometimes we'd go for longer, and we used to get parachute drops into the jungle. We'd have a radio operator with us, and we'd try to find somewhere where we could lay out fluorescent strips, and which was a DZ, of course, and the radio operator would be in touch with a decoder aircraft, and they used to drop rations to us, probably for 10 days to a fortnight. I think 14 days was the maximum amount of rations that we carried because of the excess weight, because by that time I had big packs and that. Used to weigh almost 100 weight, I should think, 3/4 of 100 weight. And I was a brain gunner, and so I had a brain gun which weighed 23 pounds and five ammunition packs. So we were very well laden, water bottle, and we had to have our change of clothes. And so we were very heavily laden, and when we were fully laden, good job we were strong, tough men, otherwise we'd have never survived uphill and downdale. And Malayan is a very treacherous terrain in the jungles, very rocky in places. 1 minute you may be crossing a river up to your neck, or the next minute you may be sliding on your backside down over rocks, and or crossing over a river over a single pole. So life was very, very tough and very rough. And the worst thing I found about the jungle was mosquitoes, wretched things. You never lost them. They used to torment you day and, well, mainly at night time, but they would torment you at night time. Leeches, sometimes we used to stop every hour. We used to de-leech one another with a cigarette. We had to learn to smoke there to get the leeches off us. We used to burn sometimes in certain areas 60 leeches off our legs in an hour. So I don't know who the hell they got through your clothes, but they managed to somehow. And we used to have horrendous tales of where leeches had got somewhere into our private parts. And some of the lads used to say, oh my God. We used to have a good laugh about that. But they never hurt us, provided you burnt them off with a cigarette. I mean, if you try to pull them off, they didn't leave the head in your leg. You then, because the other problem we had, we used to get tinea, which was dreadful sores in your crutch and under your armpits and around your ankles. Oh, it was awful, really awful. When we went off patrol, we went to the MO, and they used to paint us with this iodine stuff. Oh, and it was awful. We used to walk around like a scarecrow, stiff arms and legs, and you waddled back to your basher, and it was awful. So life, I'm afraid, in the army in 1948, 49, 50 was certainly not a bed of roses.
Did you ever have any contacts with the enemy?
Yeah, we had one or two slight skirmishes, but we also, as far as one or two lads, we lost one or two lads. I wasn't on that patrol. I was in Kinrara Hospital in Kuala Lumpur at the time. I had an injury to my foot. So I missed that patrol, and I lost my super sergeant and one of the lads, one of my colleagues, which is very sad. But the battalion had several scraps, and but we didn't lose too many men. I've done only those two in my company. Unfortunately, we lost a lad who got drowned in a river. Very sad that was. I was with them that day, but that was sad. I can't think of any else.
What did you actually see of the enemy?
What did you see? Not a lot of them, unfortunately. They like all bandits, they don't come out and fight. They hide, and they stab you in the back. It's, you know, it's a typical of the IRA. They don't stand out and fight. They hide, and try to find something in the jungles, which is where they hid. Which was a marvelous, hiding for them. And so, if we came across them, it was surely by accident. And otherwise, they would hit you on a vulnerable part of the road, on a bend in the road where you were sat in trucks. They would be up on the roadside firing straight at you, or lob grenades at you. But otherwise, they wouldn't come out and fight.
Did you account for any of the enemy?
Yes, the company did account for a few of the enemy, yeah. And we harassed them, we moved them around.
Did you ever see any of their dead bodies?
Yeah.
Under what circumstances did you see them? Any specific details?
Well, one of our lads shot one day, and we had to carry him back out the jungle, which was mighty heavy. So he was obviously well fed. Some of the lads. We had to carry them out.
How had he managed to shoot him?
Oh, we found him in a hut. We found him in a hut.
By himself?
No, I think there was two of them. Two of them. And the other one got away, I think.
Could you identify him as one of the enemy?
Oh yeah, if they got a rifle. Oh yeah, he had a rifle. Oh yeah, and the trouble is, in those sort of circumstances, you know, like a lot of other banditry warfare, you don't know, because they don't hold their weapons in front of them, or their hand grenades. They hide their hand grenades, and they throw them when you're not looking or behind your back. So you have to be in those types of warfare. You have to be extremely careful at all times of the day and night, because you don't know who is the enemy. They're not dressed as, the majority of them were not dressed as the enemy. So you had to be extremely careful.
What about casualties to your unit?
Yeah, we lost quite a number of lads, injured and killed and wounded. But we didn't lose too many. So we didn't have a, wasn't like the Second World War where you had a God Almighty scrap, where regiments lined up against one another. It was you were fighting the unknown and the hidden enemy.
Were you present when any of the casualties were inflicted on the Coldstream Guards?
No, I wasn't. No, the patrol that my platoon got ambushed. Well, they didn't get ambushed. They got ambushed indirectly afterwards, where they lost a couple of lads. I wasn't there that day, no.
Were you ever in any ambushes yourself?
We laid quite a lot of ambushes. Because there was always theories about this leader was coming along, or that leader was coming along. But I was never involved in any gunfire directly myself, no.
Did you used to dread going into the jungle or not?
No, I don't know. You couldn't really dread it, because it was, if you did, you wouldn't go. You would go absent or whatever.
Could you avoid it?
Could I avoid it? The only way you could avoid it was going sick or banging your knee and getting your knee to swell up or something. I don't ever remember wishing to miss a patrol. No. That's what we were there for, and we just had to get on with it. And get on with it we did. If a son of us become dissenters, we weren't in the right place, so we shouldn't have been there. So
did you feel yourself in any danger in the jungle?
Oh yes, oh yeah. You were constantly in danger. The next corner you turn, you never know. You come across all sorts of, sometimes they used to dig holes in the track and put boughs and sticks and leaves across it, and in the bottom of these holes they would put spikes sticking up, so it stabbed up through your stomach. I mean, or they would bend boughs back, which broke your ankles as you marched along, as you walked along. The next place you come to might have been the enemy waiting to blow the life out of you. So,
did any of your comrades walk into those traps?
Some of them did. Yeah, one place we came across about 40 or 50 of the enemy had just left. So what sort of reception would we have got from them if they hadn't left before we got there? They left a military camp in the jungle, so we came to our lucky stars that day. The fire was still burning, so and there was all these huts and a barrack square in the middle of the jungle, so, and they left all this ammunition behind, Tommy guns and all sorts of things, so we escaped that day, or they did. So we counted our blessings that day.
What did you do with all the weapons that you got?
Well, they got handed over to the local police.
Was anything else of interest or use retrieved from that camp?
I don't know. It wasn't our task as military to itemize. That would have been the position of the local police, because we worked in conjunction with the local police.
What did you think of the work of the local police?
Mixed, I suppose. Mixed. Yeah. That's about all I have to say, mixed. I mean, we weren't really in a position really to make a fair judgment against them. We would only make a superficial judgment of our own thoughts.
Was that the only jungle camp you captured?
Oh, the only significant camp. I mean, we used to come across small instances where one or two or three or four may have stayed, but that was the only significant. That was the only significant. Most of these people lived in amongst the villages, and you didn't know them as bandits because they didn't dress as bandits. They slipped out the back door with their rifles and etc. They may have hid them in the jungle, and when they met up, they formed their own little local gangs, and then when they went back home again, they hid their rifle or whatever gun they had. And they mixed into as a member of the general public again, which all bandits do. They're honest member of the general public normally, but then they have this other desire to do away with other people that annoy them.
What was it like sleeping in the jungle?
Grim, particularly with these mosquitoes. Wet. It used to rain considerably. You didn't know if a python was sliding under you and trying to slide over your body in the night time in our little batches we used to make. Then we used to have to do guard duties all night as well, so we used to get woken up for that. We used to have two sentries, one end, one the other, so we had to do guard duties throughout the night. We used to wake one another up. We knew who we had to relieve. We